Okay, now it's your time. Phone calls with our two special guests tonight, Bill Ryan, Richard Doty. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Richard Doty, what do you think of this story in the posting? Did you expect it, something like this, to finally happen?
No, I didn't. I this surprised me when this was posted. I never expected somebody would come forth and with this information.
Are you glad they have?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's about time the story is told. I'm just interested to see what our government is going to do, what they're going to say regarding this.
And you, Bill Ryan, the website, of course, serpo.org. How long do you keep it going? Until the story's told or beyond?
That's a wonderful question. It's like I started this little fire here, and I'm thinking, hey, hang on a minute. I can't go away and leave this thing. I've got to kind of keep tending it until something happens. And this may go on for quite a long time. I have absolutely no idea what timescale Anonymous and his colleagues are thinking of continuing this release program for. If we're 2% into a 3,000-page document and he's posting every few days, this could go on for months. Now, I welcome that because I'm the kind of guy who really enjoyed the Lord of the Rings films, and I'd wish that that they made 10 more of them, you know. So I've got a ringside seat here, and I'm very happy with it. It's pretty time-consuming. I'll be very curious to know by the end of this evening how many messages I've got to answer.
Good luck.
So far, we've had a few dozen, and some of them, like Richard's, have been most thoughtful. I'm expecting now a few hundred, or maybe even 1,000 or two. And
I hope, Bill, you've done your Christmas shopping, because you're not going to have time to do it now.
To tell you the truth, George, you know, this is the kind of problem I'm delighted to have. I know that. I'm surrounded by a team of people here who'd be happy to help with the correspondence. I want to see everyone involved in this. We're starting to see this little team come together here. It's a virtual team. We don't know each other personally, but I had a long conversation with Rick this afternoon. We're delighted to get to know one another. I believe that there are ways of handling these problems, and it's the kind of problem I want to have, you know?
Okay, let's go to the phones because they're all lining up as well. We'll go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. You can get us started. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Yes, my name is Paul. I live about 20 minutes from Gulf Breeze, Florida.
Okay, Paul.
And, by the way, good show. If this story is true, did the military personnel age normally after they came back? And does current administration know about it? And why don't they stop y'all from talking about it? They figure that, you know, nobody listens to the late night show, and I listen offline.
Well, they haven't stopped you yet, and I don't think they're going to. Who wants to take that first? You, Bill? You, Richard?
Well, this is one for Rick. Let me just comment on, the dilemma that the government has now is if the government comes forth right now and says, listen, we've had this stuff locked away, and it's about time we tell the public what's going on and what we have locked away. Do you imagine the ramifications that would occur? Now, on the other hand, if Mr. Anonymous and his group holds a news conference and displays pictures or documents supporting this exchange, can you see the ramifications that would occur then?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So as to why our government is allowing this, I think I was told, and maybe Bill will comment on this too, I was told that the government, the White House, is actually preparing or had prepared a response just in case a question is asked during a news conference with Scott McClellan. I think, Bill, you heard that too, I understand.
I've heard various rumors. I mean, I'm in no position to comment on this. I'm not sure if this is our place to speculate on this right now, but I appreciate Paul's question. This is one of the reasons why, as I said in my site, I choose to hide out in the open here, because I haven't got anything to be afraid of. If somebody comes to my door and puts a bullet through my head, then the world's going to know about it, and that'll be confirmation of the story, so they're not going to do that. I've got nothing to hide. I've got no links with intelligence communities anywhere in the world. And so I'm quite happy to come out with this stuff, and I don't think anyone's going to do anything about it. I would encourage anyone out there who has any information that they have. I mean, earlier on we were talking about what might the motivation be for retired government employees who for decades have been sworn to secrecy. They may be nearing the end of their lives now, bless them. And I can kind of imagine what it might be like thinking, well, okay, I've got a few years ahead of me now, and I'm sitting on one of the greatest secrets that it's ever been mankind's privilege not to know. And Maybe I should just do the right thing and spill the beans, you know?
You're right, Bill. We have two major cases here where former Colonel Philip Corso, who has now died, released information when he was up in age, and then he died a short time after his book was published, the day after Roswell. We have the former Canadian Prime Minister, who's in his 80s, who has gone public for the first time. So you're absolutely right that these individuals, when they get to a certain age, I think they decide that, you know what, it's about time that they talk. And maybe they're doing it for their kids. Who knows? But I think that's what's beginning to happen with them.
I think they're doing it for their consciences. It's like just sitting, looking back on their lives with the satisfaction of their own integrity, knowing that they've done the right thing. And if there's anybody listening who is wondering, should I or should I not say something, I would encourage people to do the highest, greatest thing that they can. This is for mankind. This isn't just for a group that has an agenda or that may have vested interests that we can only guess at. This is something that's greater than that. It's greater than all of us. And if anybody wants to communicate with me, there are ways to do this through the contact form on the website. You don't have to give your own email address. You have to put in something, but just put in contact@sobo.org, and then that'll get through to me. And then there's information, and then we can pick it up, and then we can work with it. But if anybody knows anything, let's have it on the table. This seems to be the time. There's a lot of corroboratory indications that this is now it's a time where this is happening. So there seems to be a groundswell, a kind of movement. Maybe it's even caused by the fact that there are a lot of people who are involved in these programs back in the 60s and 70s, and maybe they are looking in the mirror, they are looking back at their lives, they are thinking, well, maybe I need to do something. This could be a contributory factor. Let's get it out in the open and let's have this moving.
What did the group eat on this planet, Serpo?
Okay. We're told that they don't eat meat. We're told that they eat vegetables. We're told that their digestive systems are very efficient, and they don't, I mean, this is one of these peculiar little details that to me kind of rings true, that they don't excrete very much. This was a kind of an interesting problem for the human team there, because in comparison with the Ebens, they excreted all the time, you know, like humans do. But the Ebens didn't really do that very much. And so special provisions had to be made for them. So we know that the Ebens had a very efficient digestion.
They'd be the perfect pets then, Bill.
That sounds like it.
What did our people eat up there?
They took 45 tons of equipment with them, so we're told, 90,000 pounds of equipment, including military sea rations, enough to last them for, I mean...
Not 13 years?
Well, no. Enough to... apparently their food lasted them for a couple of years, and then they managed to eke that out for another 8 months, to last for 2 years and 8 months. They didn't care for the Eben food at first. And then I guess they had a kind of Hobson's choice. It was either the Eben food or the military sea rations, and then eventually they weaned themselves over to the Eben's food. And clearly they survived pretty well on that for the rest of the time.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hello, Hello, George. This is Scott Tucker. I'm in Plainview, Texas. I had a comment and a question. I had a comment for you about Monday night or Sunday night show about the Iran nuclear thing with Israel. That was a really interesting show.
Okay, thanks. Go ahead. Go ahead with your question, though.
My question is for these guys, if this is so top secret, why aren't these people ending up dead? I mean, very suspiciously, because that would be what the highest levels of security people getting leaked out like that. I would think they'd end up dead. It's not that because I believe in aliens. It's just that I would think they would want to keep this covered up.
Let's let you answer that, Richard Doty, because you've got the military background.
Well, I tell you what, in all my years in intelligence, and I worked in both counterintelligence, counterespionage, meaning we worked agents against the Soviet Union, I never heard of a agent being killed by us. I've never heard of any type of a black operation team that went around killing people. There were some cases back in the early 50s, but they just don't do that. The intelligence community, the U.S. government just doesn't do that. We don't go around killing our own people, quiet them up. There's other ways to do it. I mean, the threat of prosecution for espionage or unauthorized disclosure of classified information or something like that. But I've never heard of anybody being murdered for releasing it.
First time caller line, you're on the air with us. Welcome to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Art. How are you, Richard, Bill, and George? What a pleasure to talk to you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Quick story, and then I have a question for you, Mr. Doty. I was a cadet over at the Air Force Academy, and this was just vindication after many arguments that I had with my roommate and other classmates about the existence of aliens. And one of the reasons that this came up was when we were learning about space history, one of our captains had said, hey, aliens don't exist. And then a general stood up after he said that, after he had left, and said, actually, they do. And we just all kind of chuckled. But anyway, the question I have for you, Richard, is being from New Mexico, I have always wondered, do you have an opinion as to why there has been so much activity and so much history regarding visitations and activity out in New Mexico? What is it about New Mexico? Why not anywhere else in the world?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't know that answer. I've known people have speculated that the New Mexico area is similar to that of the extraterrestrial's planet, and that they were attracted to New Mexico by the detonation of the first A-bomb back in 1945.
That makes sense. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. I'm glad you called the program. Isn't it interesting, Richard Doty and Bill Ryan, John Kennedy's killed in 1963. This apparent trip occurs in 65. Some people have theorized that one of the reasons why he was assassinated was he was going to go public about UFOs.
Yes, I heard that. And, you know, ironically, one of the postings mentioned that they almost canceled the mission because of the death of President Kennedy, and that apparently President Johnson was briefed and gave the go ahead for it. But I think it also said in the posting that President Johnson didn't think it was going to occur.
Okay,
Bill might be able to expound on that.
Yeah, Bill?
I have absolutely no view on this at all. I have no information to offer, I'm afraid.
Okay, that's fair enough. Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi. My question is for Richard.
Sure.
And I was wondering if anybody has considered the fact that there may be people that are a little more prepared to go on these trips, that they've been prepared.
Explain that a little bit more for us.
Oh,
You mean they've been trained for these trips?
No, physically changed.
Oh, physically changed, genetically altered, maybe for endurance or something like that?
Well, I don't know how they would be changed.
Hmm.
But
anything on the postings, Bill Ryan, about that, that these 12 who went might have been changed, altered a little bit?
Absolutely nothing at all. There's not the slightest indication of that. These are ordinary flesh and blood 100% human beings like you and me, as far as we're led to believe.
Yet there is talk that these aliens came to this planet thousands of years ago and did a little manipulation, didn't they?
The rumors that have been circulating throughout the ufology community for decades about this, I have no information about this. I don't believe Anonymous has said anything about this that's in that leads us in any direction towards being able to resolve that kind of thing. To me, it's the field of speculation, and I'm really interested in data. I'm really interested in this particular release program. If next week or the week after that, our Anonymous friend discloses some information about that, then I'll have an opinion. And until then, I don't.
What about the didn't they though say that they planted a human on this planet to assist us a couple thousand years ago?
That's very true. They apparently. This is one of the incredible pieces of information that's presented in front of us, and one of the things that I pointed out, of course, is that this is a real button for us. We start thinking now, who was this? You know, a couple of thousand years ago, it could be somebody who was unknown to history. It could have been Alexander the Great. It could have been Plato. It could have been Socrates. It could have been, it might even have been Gautama Siddhartha, if their time scale was just a little stretch beyond that couple of thousand. It doesn't have to have been the person who we immediately think it was. And it's just one of those tantalizing pieces of information that we can chew on forever, but it doesn't actually help us very much until we have something definitive. And at the moment, we just don't have anything definitive.
George, did the caller, did she mean that once they came back, were they genetically altered?
I'm not sure. I think before they left,
I see.
Were they altered in order to, I guess, endure the, you know, the 13 years
okay.
out there?
Okay.
Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Good evening, George, Bill, and Richard.
Hi.
Good evening.
Quick comment, you know. My friend and I saw a UFO in 1976, and to this day, we've never told anybody about it because it was such an incredible deal. So I totally believe this is possible. And my question, I have a two-part question. First of all, was there anything in the postings about how they communicated with these people? Did they actually, like, speak English or something? And then second of all, did they say anything about the planet? Was there, like, trees and oceans and wild animals on it?
Great. Thank you for that one. We're told that there were significant problems in communication, which is really interesting. There were apparently a couple of linguists on the trip, which indicates that they were expecting to have issues to do with this, which I guess is not entirely surprising. Interestingly, we're told that one of the women was a linguist, and so, you know, this particular person wasn't necessarily like a GI or a pilot, you know, that she was a linguistic specialist, so we're given to understand. But even so, it appears that there were tremendous difficulties in really understanding the aliens' language. It didn't translate directly into English, as far as I'm led to understand. They spoke, if spoke is the right word, in a kind of tonal sort of chanting.
All right, hold that, Bill. Let's finish that up and also talk about the animals and creatures that were on this planet when we come back, and we'll take final phone calls as well. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, as you know, John Lear once said that he believes the moon was towed into position. Well, our guests Christopher Knight and Alan Butler will talk about who built the moon. They'll be talking about whether or not the moon is artificial, hollow, and why it was engineered to sustain life on the planet. And we'll be back in a moment with our two guests, Bill Ryan and Richard Doty, and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Bill Ryan, Richard Doty, our guests. I'm George Norrie. We'll take your final calls. Bill, let's chat a little bit about animals and creatures that might be on that planet. Did they describe it at all?
They described some Tantalizingly interesting creatures, yes. The first major creature they encountered, they described it looked like an armadillo. And this creature apparently was extremely hostile. It started to attack the team several times. And they were with an Eben guide. And this guide used some kind of a sound device, some kind of a sonic beam, to scare away this armadillo. Later on, they found a strange animal, which they nicknamed the Beast. It looked like a large ox, but this was timid. It apparently was not a hostile animal. Another creature we're told about was something that they nicknamed the Mountain Lion. Because it looked like a mountain lion, it had long fur around its neck. But apparently this was not hostile. The animal was very curious, but there was no need to take any action against this creature. And they found something that was like a large snake with a particularly large head that was 15 feet long and a foot and a half in diameter. All of these, I mean, this is extraordinarily tantalizing information. There must have been more creatures that they saw. They didn't describe so far the, you know, bird life or insect life or any fish in the water that was there. There weren't any large oceans, apparently. There are comparatively small bodies of water. And as I've said a few times before, we're only a tiny fraction of the way through the total volume of information that there must be to be released. And each of Anonymous's postings, it's kind of like on a different topic, you know, like there's one posting that's about geology, there's another posting about the team training, there's another posting about the climate, another posting about the Eben social customs and rituals and their language. And we're still waiting for one, I guess, that goes into more detail about the zoology and the ecology, and maybe that's to come. We invite your listeners to keep on checking the site to see what's there.
Very good. Let's go back to the phones. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. My name is Mark. I'm calling from South Dakota.
Hey, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Very honored to speak with you. I apologize. I missed the first part of the show, so I didn't hear how they got transported or what sort of transportation was done to get to this planet.
They got in an alien craft of which we don't know yet, nor do we know the propulsion. Hopefully, whoever's been posting on the Serpo website will start releasing that information, too.
Any other forms of transportation that they thought other than a ship?
Bill?
Okay. Well, what we know is that the journey took 9 months, so we're told. It took 9 months going, and it took 7 months coming back. For some reason, probably it was a different kind of craft. There's no reason to believe that they're all the same. Maybe some are faster than others. They took 45 tons of equipment with them, and surviving with a crew of 12 plus whatever even pilots and crew there were for 9 months, so you're talking about a pretty large spaceship. And so this isn't going to be one of those flying discs that we hear so much about that might be maybe 10, 20, 30 feet in diameter. This is going to be a large interstellar craft. And we've spoken before in this show about the commonly accepted tenets of ufology, so to speak. And what is commonly accepted is that these relatively small disc-shaped craft are intra-atmospheric craft. They're not designed for interstellar flight. They don't have the wherewithal for that. They don't have a lot of room inside, so we're told. And it may well be that the interstellar craft are out there somewhere in orbit around the sun, or possibly around our planet or on the moon or somewhere. This is pure speculation. And then the smaller craft are their scout craft that just come to take a look and see what we're doing down here. But we don't know the details. We're told that on the planet Serpo itself, the local forms of transport were these little devices. They all levitated off the ground. They didn't run around in cars with wheels like we do. They had something that had some kind of capacity to hover or levitate or anti-gravitate itself off the ground and then move around that way. We're told that these little craft, they were easy to learn to fly. And within a couple of days, our team managed to master these things. They didn't have to be taxied around. They had these things at their disposal. Beyond that, we don't know anything, and we're still waiting.
And, it, you know, the fact that there are only 650,000 inhabitants on that planet still boggles my mind, Bill.
That's the information we've got. And yeah. If Mr. Anonymous and his colleagues are listening to this now, which I suspect that they are, I'd like to say hello to them. I'd like to thank them for all their efforts and their courage and their integrity in coming forward with this information. You can get a feel for the sort of information which people are hungry to receive now. This is one of the questions I think that people would love to have a little bit more clarity on. If there's any possibility of hearing about it, then let's hear more. People would really appreciate that.
Bill, do you have any interaction with Anonymous?
Absolutely none.
None. Okay. If you ever do, I would be more than willing to invite him on the program with you again. And again, it would be anonymous to talk in depth about this.
I absolutely understand where you're coming from. I think this would be any radio commentator's dream Christmas gift. I do have to say that what little understanding I have of the process which is happening here, I do think this is extremely unlikely. I do not think that this group will ever make themselves known. They would be hounded. And if they are senior citizens with a lifetime of distinguished service behind them who are now trying to do their best for their country and for mankind, I don't think they're doing this for the limelight. I think they're doing this out of a sense of duty and integrity. And I don't think they want their names known. I think they want the information out.
Okay. Well, that's what I'm saying, though. I mean, I would interview him anonymously.
Well, if he's there and he's listening now, he's listening to your words, and he can get in touch through Victor Martinez and the postings that we're receiving regularly, or anyone can contact me anonymously through the Serpo contact page, and I wouldn't have a clue who it's from.
All right.
All I get is the message.
And I could take a direct email at george@coasttocoastam.com and try to get you, Bill, to verify who this individual might be in terms of maybe you pre-screening him for me in the event that he is not who he is not. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name's Diane. I'm from Minnesota.
Hi, Diane.
And I have a question for Bill.
Sure.
You kind of answered, I guess, a little bit ago when you said that our crew was able to travel on the planet. But I guess I was wondering if our crew was accepted by their society, or if they had to be hidden like an alien being is hidden here if they come here. And I guess one more quick question. Is there any plans for anybody to go back, or has anything like that been discovered?
Wonderful questions, Diana. Thank you very much. Apparently, we're told that they were able to travel freely. They were guests of the planet's leaders and their civilization. They had some guides with them. They had no problems traveling. They weren't kept secret, or they traveled widely. They conducted scientific experiments. They surveyed the geology and the vegetation and the ecology, as we're told. And in fact, they even traveled to another planet of the system, which is called Otto. These details are on the site, Otto, O-T-T-O. It was further out, apparently, from Serpo. There were some animals on that site, but no indigenous intelligent life. And this is where the Ebens would mine for minerals. And they did visit Otto, and they did come back. And that's all we know. And, Diana, please forgive me. I've forgotten your second question.
Let's move on, though, because we've got so many people still stacking up here. But, Richard, I did want to ask you with regards to this film, how authentic did it look to you that you saw back in 1980s?
It was quite authentic. It was a government film. It was appropriately nomenclatured, indicating it was a government film. And I was in a secure area when I saw it, so it looked legitimate to me.
Okay, let's go to our wild card line. It's your turn. Hi there. Hello.
Hey, George.
Yes, sir.
Sean.
Hi,
truck
Sean.
Across
Good
Arkansas. Good
to have you with us.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Sean.
Oh, okay. Well, what I was wondering was, you know, that they were saying it was an exchange program. I was wondering if you could tell me that if they actually left anybody here when they went, they didn't leave anybody here with, you know, when they went or whatever.
Yes, they did indeed. Let me pick this up. This was something we discussed in the earlier part of the program. Our first visitor was an alien being, we got to call him a person, who we named EBE-1, Extraterrestrial Biological Entity. He arrived with the Roswell crew. His other five compatriots died. He lived for 5 years until he died in June 1952, and it's through his arrival that the whole communication with his society was set up. The second visitor, EBE-2, came for 20 years, arrived in April 1964 and left in 1984. And then there were three more visitors, one of which was female, who arrived in 1978 and left in November 1994. And that was, just doing my arithmetic there, that's 16 years. Now, This isn't information that comes directly from Anonymous. These, again, are the commonly accepted tenets of UFO lore. They're pretty well established. Rick Doty may be able to comment on that, but it was genuinely an exchange program. We entertained these guys as our guests at the same time.
I wonder if they're still here. Richard Doty, what do you think?
No, I don't think they are. I knew of three. And there's supposed to be a fourth one, but I never had any knowledge of that fourth one. I knew there were three, and the third one being a female.
Was it just our country that had this kind of relationship with them, or did the former Soviet Union, China, England, did they have a relationship?
Well, we could do an entire story on an incident that occurred in China some years ago that the U.S. intelligence reported, but. Just a short answer, yes, apparently there was an incident in China.
Do we know if the Germans, prior to World War II, had any kind of intervention with them?
Well, there's rumors of that, and there's a supposedly, I've never seen it, but there's supposedly a document that somebody uncovered in Hitler's, in the Third Reich, files that mentioned this, but then again, it was something I've seen on the internet, and I've never seen it. Just the rumors of it.
All right, let's go to our international line. Where are you calling from? Hi there.
It's John calling from Saskatchewan.
Hi, John. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I hear you guys are interested in communicating with somebody with military intelligence community. We got a little frustrated. Like, I'm former military intelligence. We got frustrated with our system. So we approached Lieutenant General Hillier and Lloyd Axworthy directly. We've handed over some documents. We were trying to get down to Dr. Greer, and for whatever reason, every time we'd send it down, it was intercepted. He never received it. Some of the information there you'd definitely find interesting. If you've ever heard of an area called the Cold Lake Air Weapons Range, it's approximately the size of about one-third of all of Wyoming. That's definitely an area of interest for some of your researchers to start taking a look at.
I wonder if, John, just before this program closes here, would you care to email me some details on the SERPO contact form? You can do this anonymously if you wish. I'd be more than welcome to hear any information that you have to offer here. I'll be able to get it to you I'll be able to get it to the right hands.
Excellent. That's actually why I've been calling, because I'm actually getting a little frustrated trying to contact some of these people. Like, for example, Stanton Freeman, I think he just ignores me or whatever. But, yes, I definitely would like to get in touch with you and sit down over a cup of coffee, and we could go over some of this stuff.
Well, I'm not sure about the coffee, but not because I don't like coffee, but I think we're in different parts of the world. But if you want to get in touch with me, I'll do whatever I can do to get your information to the right people.
Okay.
All right, John, and you're in Canada. Are you Canadian military at the time or U.S.?
I was Canadian military for 9 years, and then I went to work for the NSA for 3 years.
Okay.
And then I had a little dispute with my handlers, and I left. I've actually called you a couple times over some interesting stuff. For example, you were curious about your doppelgangers. And I
I remember your name now.
Yeah, and I gave you the heads up as to what the heck was actually going on there.
If you'd like, we'd also put you on hold now, and you can get our mailing address if you want to send us anything at Coast to Coast.
All right.
All right, let's do that. Put him on hold, Steve, and Tommy, take it away. And we'll share information as well, Bill, if anything comes our way and vice versa. Let's stay in touch with each other on that, okay?
For sure.
Next up, not too much time left, so let's get a quick call in. We'll go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Okay. Hi, George. Hi, guys. A previous caller asked my question, which was going to be if they left anybody behind, so that was covered. But I did want to, maybe this can cap off the program. What do you guys, Bill and Richard, what do you think is the purpose of it all? And the reason I ask that is because when we have exchanges, like you've been calling it an exchange, between, say, high school programs, you know, just a cultural exchange, it's supposedly for the betterment of mankind and so on and so forth. But do you think they're really that interested in learning about us? We know we are about them. And can you address that a little bit?
I think they legitimately are. If they've been monitoring us for several thousand years, they're probably checking up on us to see how we have advanced over these several thousand years. So they're just as interested in us as we are them.
And your thoughts, Bill?
Thank you. Yes, I think we have to put ourselves in the position of primitive tribesmen in some little island somewhere in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And we're visited by these high-tech people from our Western world in America. And we, you know, with all the altruism that we have, we would probably want to help those guys. We'd want to give them a little bit of technology. We wouldn't want to wreck their civilization. We'd be very careful about what we were doing. We'd want to gently ease them into the larger community of different races, higher technology, but at the same time, we'd want to respect them, we'd want to treat them well, and we wouldn't want to give them too much of a shock. And if you look at the analogies there, there may be something very similar happening, but that's just my speculation.
All right, Bill's website is Serpo, S-E-R-P-O.org. It's linked up with his name on coasttocoastam.com. Both of you, Bill Ryan, Richard Doty, thank you. This has got to be, for me personally, one of the most fascinating topics I've ever dealt with in my career. And let's just stay in touch with each other, okay?
Thank you, George.
Thank you very much, George. It's been a pleasure.
This is a truly remarkable story. For Steve Carr, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudisori, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.